Blog Talk Radio.
Hallelujah. Good morning, friends. It's Blog Talk Radio, Saturday morning on the Cosmic Citizen Show. Welcome to the show. Today we are promoting a couple of things. First of all, a great book by a dear old friend, Mary Eben Livingston. Oh, and by the way, with me is my good friend, Chrislyn Beek Larson, and co-host. Hi, Chrislyn.
Good morning.
Good morning. So we're promoting Mary's book, Mary Eben Livingston. She wrote back in probably 1994. She wrote a synopsis of the Urantia book called Urantia Book Basics, and she wrote it specifically for her husband because she didn't think her husband at the time was ever going to read the book, and she wanted him to get the gist of it so he would understand it. And she was working for Jesusonian Foundation at the time, and so was I. We worked together. We were colleagues. And she painstakingly wrote this book, and it turns out that Mary, I think, is a gifted writer, and she just has a knack for it. And the book has been one of the best one of the most beloved secondary works of the Urantia Book of all times. And in fact, it's been translated now into several different languages. Students of the Urantia Book all over the world love this book. And she recently republished it, self-published it, and she spent the last 15 years rewriting it, revising it. She feels like it's even better than ever. And it's available now through Tuscan Sky Publishing, which is a self-publisher online. And with us is another devoted Urantia Book reader who has created Tuscan Sky to help aspiring poets and authors get their works published. And his name is David. David, are you with us today?
Indeed I am, Paula. Good morning, Paula and Crystalyn and Mary. I'm sure you're out there. And all of your listeners, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world.
Yeah, that's the beautiful thing about Blog Talk. It goes all over the world, and we love that. You know, depending on where you are, if you're listening, welcome to the show. And Mary has asked David, as her editor and publisher, to come and speak about the book, the new edition. And then we'd also like to talk to David about his story, because it's an interesting story. We'd like to talk about Tuscan Sky Publishing and some other projects David's working on. So welcome to the show, David.
Thank you very much. I look forward to your show.
Oh, good.
It's been great getting to know you, David.
And same to you, Crystalyn. We've spent many an hour on the phone over the past few days.
We have indeed.
Well, that's always nice to be able to just spend some time getting to know people. It's just as the UB says, you get to know their motives and sentiments, and then you feel like you really know them, and eventually you'll fall in love with them. I've known of you, David, for a long time. As we were chatting before the show went on, Mary met you probably in 1994 or 5 at the Whole Life Expo in Santa Fe.
And that's exactly correct.
And she was out behind the expo having a cigarette. Mary, the way Mary came up with her greatest works was to go out in her garage and smoke. And while she was out there, she would have, you know, smoking, she would start typing. She had a typewriter all set up. And Mary's done some wonderful works and outreach and study aids for the Urantia Book in that very way. But she met you behind the expo, and she came running in to tell me all about it. She was so excited. She said, "I met the most amazing person."
Well, that's high praise. I'm just a person like everyone else.
Yeah, I know, but she was really, she felt a kinship and a connection to you from the very beginning, and it turns out you guys have been dear, dear friends for a long time now, and that's gratifying. And so tell us about, you know, what you know about Mary's book and your involvement in about Tuscan Sky, if you will.
I'd be more than happy to. Well, first a little bit about Mary's book. You know, as she says in her own book, she has what she calls My Experiences, which is part of the introduction to the book. There is a backstory, and she has one just like everybody does when they endeavor to do something as big as this project is. If no one has written a book before, they don't realize that even a simple book, and this one is not simple by any stretch of the imagination, are very difficult sometimes to put down on paper, where you know that individuals want to get your communication. And she actually has spent the past 17 years or so on a continual process of start and stop, getting this book into the form that you now find it in, known as Quivering on the Brink, which, as you said, is the new format of her old basics of the Urantia Book. And I'm just going to take a moment here and read three little paragraphs out of her experiences, because she says it better than I could say about her introduction to this concept of the Urantia Book. She says, "I had more than my fair share of childhood trauma. By age 10, I had fallen away from God. Actually, I had a huge fight with God and told him in a fit of rage that I would never, never, ever speak to him again. On many levels, I feared God. I believed God could make my life better, but was either mean or uncaring. With childlike ignorance, I saw God as a Santa Claus that left coal in my stocking. It was just best to keep a low profile, to live under God's radar. In 1977, I found the Urantia book. But for the most part, it sat on a bookshelf. It claimed to be a revelation, the fifth major revelation to our world. Little parts that I read were interesting, but no one around me thought it made sense. I was not ready to take on such a huge endeavor, and back then, I was not a very deep thinker. As a child, I wanted a mother more than anything in the world. As an adult, I wanted to be a mother more than anything in the world. In December of 1985, at age 34, I had my first child, a daughter. My world exploded with joy. Motherhood was everything I had imagined. I was so happy I even liked God again. My son was born in November of 1987. Two healthy, wonderful babies. I finally felt blessed and was talking to God after years of stubborn silence. I was drawn to the Urantia papers again. And she goes on. But I think that's a good introduction as to how she became involved with the concept of the Urantia book and the Urantia papers. She went on to go to study groups where she became more involved with other individuals. Perhaps one of those was even you, Paula. And she began to learn other people's viewpoints of the Urantia book. As time went along, she discovered that she really needed some basics, as you said, for her husband and perhaps others who couldn't get their teeth into the Urantia book. For those listeners who might be listening for the first time regarding the subject of this thing we're calling the Urantia book, this is a very large text. It's well over a million words, about 2,000 pages. If you were to start reading the Bible today, it would not even be that large, but that would take you quite some time to understand concepts within the Bible. The Urantia book, which is a much larger compendium of similar thought, can take you even longer. It's filled with all kinds of new words, new concepts, new ideas, new beings, new creatures, everything that might be continually new to your mind to cause you to sort of shut down and say, whoa, this is way too much information. So Mary went and created what I might like to call the Cliff Notes version of the Urantia book. She's done her very best not to change any of the concepts within the Urantia book, keeping her personal filters out of the writing, and she's consolidated it down to about 187 pages, which may not sound like much, but believe me, there's a lot of information packed in there in this Cliff Notes version, which we call Quivering on the Brink. And Mary has done an excellent job. It's well formatted. It has lots of charts to help you understand the concepts. And I can say to you that this very long effort on her part has borne very good fruit. Now,
I love the Cliff Notes. I love the, you know, I almost said that in the blurb the other day when I was writing it, that Mary created the Cliff Notes version of the Urantia book, and perhaps the best synopsis of the Urantia book ever created. And I'm glad that you read what you read, because it really shows her writing style. She's almost immediately engaging, and so thank you for sharing that. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, no problem. You just jump in whenever you want. This is not a monologue. This is a dialogue show, I rather assume. And soon I hope your callers will join with us as well.
I hope.
Through my experiences of life, just as Mary has had her experiences of life, it brought me forward to, about 6 months ago. And I had the idea from somewhere, perhaps inspired, perhaps just from my own mind, that a lot of people need help in publishing. I know that in the past, because I've been a public speaker for some time, and I have written for a few national magazines and other things, that it is very difficult for individuals to become published for the first time. I have a former father-in-law who was well-published. He was in the publishing industry, had about 63 books that were out there amongst the world. He did fiction and nonfiction. So I got to meet a lot of authors and a lot of publishers, and I learned that they're very particular about who they're willing to take, because after all, the publishing world most often is a business, and it works under a business paradigm. And so while you might want to get the basics of your ideas out to people, it's very difficult first to sell the idea to someone who will get it out there. Lucky for all of us, the world has changed to an electronic medium. Because now, instead of the publishers being in control of who gets to publish, and because of the internet, everyone can publish. And they can do it fairly simply once they've learned how to do it. And this is where the idea came along. Tuscan Sky Publishing was created as what I like to call an incubator, a place where the brand new baby authors, the baby poets, the baby artists, because it's for all three, can begin to publish and get their wings wet, so to speak, their water wings. And they can get out there till they can swim well. And once they get going, then they can start approaching the much larger publishers if they wish. Tuscan Sky Publishing is designed around a new paradigm. Mary's book was the very first book published, and she was very gracious to allow us to publish her works. It's in what's known as a PDF format. That's an electronic format. You can download it right from the internet. Mostly, though, what we do is we have the author send out copies to their various people who want to read their books so that they have a more intimate connection. But internet electronic publishing has become the power, and the power is now in the hands of the writer. So marketing becomes the problem. How does the writer, who now has their own book in their own hands, get out there to the world? And that's where Tuscan Sky Publishing comes in. We are a new endeavor. When you go to the site, it's very nice looking, I've been told, and there are a few authors on there, and we have helped each of these authors create their covers, get their books ready for publication, and Mary was no different. She came in, she already had all of the book together, it was just missing a few essential ingredients, and now it was ready for publication, and it's been out there for a few weeks now, and soon it'll be going out on much larger markets through our other affiliates in the way of the major retailers. But as a small publishing firm, we have a better opportunity to take the brand new writer, artist, poet, and get them out to the others to take notice, because every year there's well over 500,000 new titles that are published. Mary, having a book that is what we might call a niche market, first of all, the Urantia book still isn't that well known worldwide. I think you'd agree with that, wouldn't you?
Sure.
And then Mary,
one of the
Mary's book, yes, and Mary's book, which is sort of a subset of that, is even less known. And so getting one out to the general population gets the other idea out to the general population. If your listeners would like to just get samples of the book, they're already on the website. They can download and read excerpts from her book to get a bigger sense than what I just read of who Mary is. Her bio's on there, her picture. They can see what her book looks like. They get a description of it, and they can actually read sections of it. They can read. Every author gets a section that's in what's called normal PDF, that portable document file, so they can read it on virtually anything, their computer, their iPad, whatever they have handy, they can read it. And then there's also what is called a flip book style, which looks like a magazine. You can even hear the pages flipping when you turn the pages on the book, to give you a sense of what the book is before you decide whether or not a copy is good for you. Now, Mary did something very important with Quivering on the Brink. She researched how people tend to read. What is their reading level? If you are a Urantia book reader, you know it is a very difficult book to read the first time, particularly if you have English perhaps as a second language, because the Urantia book was originally in the English language, or perhaps you have a lower level of reading because you don't read a lot, and so you tend to struggle. You probably would have to have a dictionary in your hand to read the Urantia book itself, which can be somewhat frustrating. Mary designed her summary version, what I call the Cliff Notes version, at a reading level that should be comfortable for most people. You don't have to be a genius. She gets the concepts across to you very precisely and easily. But even with her book, you may have some difficulty because these are new concepts, and new concepts are always something that's difficult to learn. If somebody were to pick up a copy of Mary's wonderful book today, I'm going to suggest to them that while they read the first introductory pages and they skim through it, if they are finding that they are having difficulty with the new concepts, skip ahead, because there are no rules to reading. There are no rules to reading the Urantia book. There are no rules to reading Mary's book. You do not have to read it in a linear fashion. You can skip around. So I'm going to suggest that a lot of people might want to start with chapter 36, which begins with what's known as Michael's bestowal. The Urantia book is much the same. It has four huge sections, each of them developing into the next. But it ends up with the fourth section, which many Urantia book readers know as the Jesus Papers. But that also is dealing with the history of Jesus on our world in great detail. And that's also a good place to start if you're starting with the Urantia book itself. Mary's book follows that format, so I'm recommending that as well. So, Mary, when I asked her if she'd like to publish her book, said that she would, and she became the first author. When you go to Tuscan Sky Publishing, you will find that on the top, there is a section called Seekers of Spiritual Truth. The Seekers of Spiritual Truth will take you directly to where you can link into her book. Or, on the very first page when you go to the website, you will find what's called the catalog with a very attractive young lady reading a book. That will also take you to her book. From that point forward, you can get all the introduction to her book you want, and hopefully you'll ask many questions on this show today. I hope that's what you were looking for, Paula and Crystalline, but I'm a bit wordy, but there you go.
Oh, no.
I'm ready to Mary's book. Go ahead, Crystalline. I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead. I was just going to say no. That's why we invited you on.
I'm on the site, and I'm ready to buy Mary's book, and I'm at the featured author for April 2011, Quivering on the Brink, A New Revelation. I have the option of the published price $20 or the promo price for $15.
Yes,
promo
that would be what your listeners get. They would want to go in for the promo price. And
okay,
all we ask that they do is they make the selection, because there's a little drop down menu where it says buy now. And the normal published price is $15. Mary wanted to offer her book to your listeners at a reduced rate so that more people would become familiar with it. And so when on their order, it actually has a little space where you can put something. All we want them to do is put a little message. It actually is just a one message in there. And you can suggest the word you'd like them to put on there, perhaps the name of your show. It can be anything. But as long as we know that they heard about Mary's book from this broadcast, then we are more than happy to honor that special price.
Okay, great. And is that the $15 price?
No. No. Oh, well, actually, let me back up. I'm misspeaking on there. When you go to the book itself, where it says buy now, and
right.
I'm putting it up right now just so I don't misspeak on everybody here. There we go. Mary's book has this little drop-down menu. It says standard copy, $20. That's our published price. And then the pre-publication copy is the $15 one. If for some reason someone needs it in a CD where it's on hard copy and sent to them on a CD, I don't know why you would need that. We do make it available. It's kind of expensive to do. But the $15 price, which is, believe me, a very inexpensive price for this type of book, is what your listeners will be doing. And when they get to the order page, that'll come up through PayPal, because this is a PayPal system. It'll just have a little blank there, and you can just put the words maybe radio show.
Okay.
All right. That's
the
helpful.
The fulfillment will be at $15.
Great.
Well, that's very generous of you and her to give our listeners a discount right off the bat.
Well, we do appreciate it.
And I have to say that I've read some parts of the book already, and I'm pretty impressed. She really makes it much more accessible than a lot of other of the condensed versions of the book. I think that her approach of making it accessible at an eighth grade reading level really helps.
Very much so. And the goal, of course, is that when a person reads Quivering on the Brink, that it'll give them enough of a basic understanding that they will then want to go further with the million words of the Urantia text itself, which is where the very intricate meat is. But Mary, I do know, always wants everyone to know this, and it's even in her book near the beginning, is the most important thing for everyone to get, whether they are reading her condensed version or they are reading the Urantia book itself, is the message of the book. The message is this, is that we all have a piece of our Creator Father within us, and the message is to love your Father of your own free will, meaning your Creator Father, to love your fellow humans as you love yourself as brothers, and to love your fellow humans as He, our Father, loved us. Those things is the basic message that you get, and everything else, as far as I'm concerned, is support material. That was Jesus' message when he was here, is how to love the Father, his Father, who is also our Father, and how to love your fellow man and the ways you go about doing that.
So here's the deal, friends and listeners. If you want to get this brand new, fully revised, and just beautiful edition, new cover, new everything, of Mary Evans Livingston's classic book, Urantia Book Basics, which is now called Quivering on the Brink, go to Tuscan Sky Publishing. It's the April featured author of the month, and you can get it under spiritual books. I suppose they could just search the site there. Once you find it, put in radio show, and you'll get it at a special listener price of $15, which is a great deal. Now, is that a hardback?
No, this is electronic only. This is electronic only.
Yeah, she's not publishing it in a hardback form yet, as I understand. At this point, that's the only format it's available.
Okay.
In the near future, Mary will be offering it in other formats, including what is known as Publish on Demand. That is not yet, but it will be at some point in the not-too-distant future, where if somebody wants to have a paper version of that book, they can order it, and an individual copy is created through new technology once again. But we have not established that yet. Right now, we're just offering it in the electronic form.
Okay, great. And that's in PDF, as you said. And can you put that on an iPhone or a reader or?
Well, it's my understanding that all readers can read PDF. The reason we've chosen the portable document file is because she has a lot of charts and diagrams, and other e-publication formats are very difficult to put in a cohesive manner those kinds of documentations. And so PDF was what we chose for the introduction because it's a highly formatted document that needs charts to be seen in a certain way.
You know, I highly recommend this book for teenagers, for a spouse, for anybody that you would love to just be able to get the gist of the Urantia book in a simplified format so they understand. You know, Mary's whole point was, I want my husband to know what I'm reading. I know he'll probably never read this book. He won't go to the trouble to read a 2,000-page book. But he would read this, and you know, if it's written at an eighth-grade reading level, then your teenagers and, you know, your friends could read it and enjoy it and get a lot out of it. And I remember from when Mary first did it that she actually put everything in chronological order. She went through the book very methodically, paper by paper.
Please forgive the background noise, you guys. I have a crew here installing a brand new swamp cooler, a evaporative cooler. It's been pretty hot. I work from an upstairs office, and so it's been brutally hot. And finally, we're going to have some relief. So.
Well, so, we haven't heard a lot of background noise so far.
Oh, good. I'm glad. I'm a little worried about it, but
we have had
right
you cut out. We did have you cut out for a minute there.
Oh, okay. It sounds like it's, you know, they're sawing something out there. Anyway, so I highly recommend this book. So, and I know Chrislyn does too. Chrislyn, you've been exposed to Your Rancher Book Basics, now Quivering on the Brink, for years and years as well. I don't know
My first interest in it was that before she wrote that, she had written a book for kids, a version of the Urantia book for kids. And that's one of my passionate interests, is having kids involved in your study groups and really recommending that families do share this with their kids as early on as possible, because my experience growing up with the book was so positive, and that I think that kids are capable of understanding much more than most people give them credit for. And we at least were really fascinated with many of the concepts in the Urantia book when we were very young. And as we grew, as we went through different stages of our childhood and then of youth and young adult, teenager, young adult, youth stages in life, we found different parts of the book really spoke to us. And that's what I first was exposed to in Mary's writing, and thought that was really great that she had done that for her kids. I think this book is written at a more complex level than her kids' version, and but I still think it's really, really does simplify the book quite a bit.
Now, her kid version is called The Young Child's Guide to the Urantia Book. And, David, I don't know if you've talked to her about this, but I think that that book has gone out of print now, too. And it really is another wonderful book that Mary has done.
Yes, I agree with you.
I hope she plans to work with you on that one, too.
Well, that would certainly be nice, but it has been an endeavor of love just getting this one put in place. I'm sure she has plans for many more writings. Well, there's a comment.
Yeah.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, she always has a comment.
But we're hoping that was a positive comment.
Yeah, yeah. She likes Mary's books. I've asked her.
Which of your pooches was this?
Yeah, you know, there's a little humorous, you know, on truthbook.com, for years we published heartwarming and humorous stories, and I collected most of those over the internet, and one of my favorites is called Doggy Haiku, and my little dog Maisie reminds me of that, because one of the haiku is, mailman fiend, come to kill us all. Bark, 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 bark. That's me. Everybody is a fiend who has come to kill us all, so she has to sound the alarm. Anyway, well, David, I would like to talk about, you know, for you to tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you find the Urantia book?
Well, I had a rather unique experience. I didn't even know that book existed prior to September of 1987. was in my early 30s. My life has always been filled with a lot of what many people might think are science fiction-like strange occurrences, which are all stories unto themselves. But in 1987, I had what the Urantia Foundation refers to as a mystical experience. I've never been fond of that word because mysticism often raises a bad connotation in most people's minds. But succumbing to the concept, I'm okay with the idea of the word mystic. And even on our Tuscan Sky website, there's a place where people can share their mystic experiences. And the details of my 1987 experience are located there. It's free. There's a lot of free stuff on the internet, and there's a lot of free stuff on our site for people to read. You don't have to buy everything that's around. And we like a lot of free things on the site where people can freely share information. And my story was one of them. But in a nutshell, it's basically this. And I don't expect anyone to have to believe anything I'm about to say. This was my experience. It was important for my spiritual development. But in 1987, I was literally taken off of our world and taken to another place where I had a conversation with the person the Urantia book readers will know as Michael. Most other individuals who are perhaps based in biblical teachings would refer to as Jesus. And our conversation was profound, and it did in fact change my life for the future. And I wrote a letter to the Urantia Foundation some years later, about 6 years after that occurrence, and they wrote me back a nice letter that basically said, you know, thank you for sharing your mystical experience. Have a nice day. And that was pretty much it. Well, I had no idea, you know, who they were or what it was, but the introduction to the book itself goes like this. I was taken off world. I had this conversation with the one we will know as Jesus or Michael, and sent back to our world here. And the very next day, through a series of very amazing, I can't call them coincidences, we'll just say that urgings from perhaps on high, I was taken to a bookstore in Tucson, and a Urantia book was literally pushed off of a bookshelf to land at my feet. And I picked it up, and I looked at it and said, oh, this is some kind of religious book. I don't want this. And the woman who was with me at the time said, oh, no, that's the one that they want you to have. And I kept asking her, well, who is this they you're talking about? She says, just think of them as angels, okay? Well, today I know that was what is known as a secondary midwayer. And so I took the book, took it home, and that was my introduction to the book. For the details, I'm just going to ask everybody to go read the letter that I have on the website. It's free. And they'll get more detail. If they have further questions, they're welcome to email me, and I'll fill them in on more. But the story itself can take me a good half hour just to tell it, and I always end up kind of crying because even to this day, 25 years later, it's still powerful within my mind and soul.
Well,
but that
you know,
was my introduction.
We have time.
Yeah. Now, go ahead.
We have time if you want to share your story. I mean, I find it fascinating, and I'll tell you why, because when you and Mary met all those many years ago, I think I was telling you earlier, she came to me at the booth. We were exhibiting the Urantia book in Santa Fe at the Whole Life Expo, and we've done quite a few of those, and I have, and Mary went and did quite a few with me, and she was out back having a cigarette and then and gone for maybe, gee, I don't know, an hour, and she came back and she said, Paula, I've got to tell you, I met the most amazing person. This guy has the most amazing story of how he found the Urantia book. Well, you know, we're always so interested because the fact that, you know, the book fell off the shelf in front of your feet, that's not the only time that's happened. It has fallen on people's heads. It has, you know, I've heard, myself personally, I've heard some pretty amazing stories. And
your own story is pretty fascinating, Paula.
Yeah. It's not as dramatic, though. And when you read it, if you read it, if you have the courage and the spiritual hunger to read it, then you realize why this happened. And I'm sure you had that experience, David. We all have. It's like, wow, everything that, you know, I've just been led to make this discovery. And it becomes so obvious. Everything becomes obvious to you. And I think what's neat about your story, which Mary told me way back then, and I've never forgotten it, I'm glad to see that you have it on your site, because now I can go read it again. What amazed me about it is that you didn't really have a context to know what you were seeing when you went to the other world until you read the book. Is that correct?
That's essentially correct as it applies to the Urantia material. As I said, I knew nothing about it. I had no idea there was an entity or a person with the name of Michael. Of course, I'd heard of Jesus. I was raised as a Lutheran. But I had no idea on anything else that was going on. I'm more than happy to relate the story if you don't think it would bore your listeners.
Well, I think they absolutely love it, to tell you the truth. They eat this kind of stuff up, and we've got plenty of time. So if you want to, that would be great.
Well, I'm more than happy to. I was basically told by Michael to share the story whenever I was asked.
Great.
The last time I shared this story back in the early 90s, a lot of individuals began taking this as some kind of a revelatory thing. So I want to preface, before I tell you my story, verbally, you can read the details, but I'm nobody special. I have had a lot of odd occurrences in my life. I've met a lot of very interesting people in my life. Many of the individuals I've met aren't even from this world, and that was before the Urantia book introduction. So the concept of things off-world were not unusual to me. But the concept of the Urantia material was new to me. Anyone listening to me right now, please understand, you have had amazing experiences in your life. They may be different than mine, but they're still amazing. But it's your life and your experiences. This one was just mine. Please don't read anything special into it. For those of you who may not know the Urantia book, perhaps you're based and grounded in biblical teachings, you may be familiar with the concept of Paul of Tarsus, who had what he calls an experience on the road to Damascus, where he met Jesus and learned many things. Well, my experience was much like that, but I didn't go out and start a religion over that experience. Paul did. So, and I'm not trying to place it in that same category, but please understand, what you're about to hear is simply my experience, and I share it for those of you who might have had other experiences but never talked about them because you thought people might ridicule it. Mm-hmm. And again, if you'd like to share it, there's a place on our website where you can share it freely without ridicule or fear of embarrassment. So, with that said, I'm happy to begin my story.
Okay.
Are you ready for me to go?
Yeah, and also, we just want to remind everybody of our call-in number. If you have an experience you want to share, if David gives you the courage for a special experience, give us a call when David's done telling his story, and the lines are open, 646-716-8158. Okay, David, let's hear it.
All right. This occurred in 1987. I was living out in the desert in a place called Casa Grande in Arizona. It's about midway between Phoenix and Tucson. And as I said earlier, up to this point in my life, I was born in 1954, so you have a sense of my age. I was pretty much set in my ways, and things I had been taught over the years were that occurrences that appear to be like magic were somehow evil. At least that's what I'd been taught. And while I didn't really believe it, there was a part of me that wants to believe that everything you're taught is true and accurate. And so anything what we might call mystical was something to be wary of. And up to that point, I had seen many things that were unexplainable, and they are in the area of what may be termed extraterrestrial or UFOs. And for some time, I was beginning to do radio shows. I was connected with a lot of scientists. And this is where I was mentally. I was very interested in things unexplainable. I was having a lot of experience with things in science that were unexplainable. And I was actively searching for answers, not necessarily spiritual or religious answers, but I was searching. Well, one night, I was laying on my sofa in my little house out in the middle of the desert. My wife was in the back sleeping. And I remember very vividly, I was watching the television. It was one of these first widescreen televisions that General Electric put out. It had a flat screen that if you moved to the side, it got too dark to see. Maybe some of you remember those. But on the top was a big red digital clock, and it had just turned 11:00 on the time, and I had just turned off Johnny Carson, for those of you old enough to remember who he is. And I was just laying there with my arm up on the couch, and I began to hear something out of my left ear. The wall was on my left side, and it sounded very muffled, like perhaps newscasters talking some kind of a newscast, but it was in a television on the other side of the wall. And I yelled out for my wife at the time. I said, "Would you turn that down? I'm trying to relax." And in that instant, I realized that that wall was the wall to my office. No one was in that office. There was no television in that office. My wife was in the back of the house asleep, and I didn't know what I was hearing. And then all of a sudden, I was gone. I was no longer in my living room. Today, what I'm about to say is going to sound very familiar. When it occurred to me, I'd never seen or heard of such a thing, but today you see all kinds of science fiction programs that talk about the concept of a wormhole. I was literally standing in a wormhole in my body, traveling through time and space as I look back on the concept, and I describe it in my instance as if you had a stack of 35 millimeter film slides. For those of you who are a little younger and are growing up in the digital age, 35 millimeter slides may be something that's unknown to you, but they're just little rectangles with film, and if you stack them up in a row and you look through them, you can kind of see light like a tunnel. Well, I was traveling through a tunnel at a very rapid pace, and I was traveling through planes that were like traveling through the pictures in slides stacked up. If you were to take a phone book or a large book and just rifle the pages, and as you view each page flipping by, your mind gets a little bit of information and then moves on to the next page, to the next page. Well, I was getting thousands of those in a matter of blinks of an eye. And I didn't know what to make of it. There was no sense of sensation, but I saw colors and things of that nature that I can't describe because we don't have language for those colors. In fact, I'm not sure that we even have senses for some of the things that I experienced in this traveling through the tunnel. And each time I would pass through the physical plane of one of these pictures, these slides as I refer to it, I was experiencing whatever was going on in that little movie from three different perspectives. One perspective was with my own as an observer from the outside. One was from the perspective, of being a participant in whatever was going on in that little film movie. And then the third perspective was one of looking at me looking at it. It was very unusual. But this was happening thousands upon thousands of times in a blink of an eye. I can't describe to you why I was able to process that information. I just was. I can't remember any of that now. Not directly. But I can remember the last two things that occurred, because I was essentially commanded, if you will, of my own free will, but it was like a command to remember them, and this is what I'm going to relate to you now. Imagine yourself standing on an emerald green grassy hillside, impeccably manicured like the best golf course you've ever seen, and you're looking over what appears to be a cobalt blue ocean. And you know, if you've ever stood on the edge of a cliff looking out at the ocean, you can see in the far distance a very precise line that looks like somebody just drew a line across the horizon. Well, this horizon appeared to be 10 times bigger to me at the time. It was just huge. And I looked up at the sky, and the sky was dark and filled with stars. None of the constellations could I tell that they matched anything here on our planet. And they were thicker. There were so many more stars than there were here. Like if you would look at the sky tonight, you could go out on a very good night and you see the Milky Way. Imagine the Milky Way many times brighter and many more bright stars hovering in your vicinity to the point where it was almost like light, but you're looking up, it's a starry night, you look down at your hands, and it's like daylight. But nowhere could I see a sun like our sun here projecting the sunlight. Looked up at the sky, dark. Looked down at my hand, daylight. So I don't know what that was all about, but it was definitely not what I was used to. And I stood there with my jaw down, and I said one word. I can remember it to this day. I just stood there looking at all this, and I went, wow. Because that's pretty much what I was feeling, was just overwhelmed. And I began to look around, and as I looked out across this ocean, I realized that it wasn't water. It was some kind of a glassy material, and standing upon this glassy material of cobalt blue were, I don't know if they were hundreds of thousands or millions, because it was I couldn't tell the numbers, but beings. All over. If you've ever seen the old movie of Moses, you know, when he parts the Red Sea, and you see all these people out in the distance and they're little tiny dots, and as they get closer to the camera, they become full-sized people, it was that kind of perspective. And there were millions or hundreds of thousands, whatever the multitude was, of these beings that were tall, fat, short, thin, human, non-human, four-legged, two-legged, different colors, some clothed, some unclothed, every different kind of variation of being was standing out in front of me until they got up to within about 20 feet of me below this little hillock I was standing on. I didn't know what to make of it. Some of them were looking up in the sky, some were talking to each other, some were looking up at me where I was standing. But I looked up where a lot of them seemed to be looking up to the right, and as I looked to the right, in the sky, a full third of the sky was a full color hologram, like watching three-dimensional television, but it was full color and deep, and it was showing events occurring on this world, what we call Earth, what the Urantia book calls Urantia, and it was showing me things and everyone else there that hadn't even occurred yet. I'm not going to say in this conversation some of those things I saw. I'll tell other people at other times, but it was showing me things that hadn't occurred yet. While all of that sounds pretty amazing, the next thing I'm about to tell you is even more amazing, to me at least, and I'm already starting to tear up because every time I tell this part of the story, I start to cry. As I'm standing there looking at all this, and forgive me if my voice is breaking, but on my left side behind me, there was a being standing, and this being was enveloped in a brilliant golden white light. And this light was permeating through my body, literally, a big glowing white, golden white light going through my body, and embedded within this light was a message, and more of a feeling. It's difficult to describe, but these two things are very sure to me. It was an impression that, number one, whoever this was standing behind me to my left had enormous power. They were a powerful individual. And even more importantly, what they were sending me was unconditional love. I'm sorry, but I can still feel it to this day when I go back into that memory, and I can't even describe it. It's not the same kind of love you get when you meet somebody that you're interested in, or the birth of a child or something like that. This was so much more. And quite literally, I miss it. I miss that feeling, and it was so powerful. Well, as I'm feeling this unconditional love go through my body and this enormous power, there's a voice speaking to me in what I can only describe as telepathically. The voice was a deep voice. It wasn't my voice. It didn't sound like my voice, but it was a voice, and I'm going to characterize it by saying it was a male voice, even though that's possibly not true. But this being was telling me why I was where I was telling me where I was, telling me who I was, and was sending me all kinds of information. But he basically said his name was Michael, and he was a creator son. I had no idea what that was, but I knew that this individual, whatever he said he was, he had power and could back it up. I'm not talking about malevolent power. I'm talking about ruling power of a sort.
Right.
He's the only being that I had any awareness of with me. I've since learned that there were more there from a third party. But in my experience, it was only he. Once I understood everything that I was being told, I was gone. I was no longer standing on the hillside. I was now standing in a little room. And this little room was about the size of a 6x8 or a 6x6 closet. It had plaster walls, kind of an off color. But standing in front of me, between the wall and myself, was about a 4-foot-high column. It was like a Greek column or a Roman column, something that you would put a piece of art like a bust on. And there was a bust on it. And it was a beautiful piece of what looked to be marble workmanship. I like to call it the old Greek sailors, the way it looked to me. It was this older man. He had beard, mustache, flowing hair. He was looking off to my left, his right. And the voice was still in my head of Michael, and he said, "Remember this face. When you meet this person again, you will have, or you'll get your memory back." Can't remember them up. That was the exact words. I wrote down the exact words, but it was essentially that when I met this person again, I would get my memory back. I didn't know what that meant at the time, but as soon as I had that face, which I can still see in my mind's eye, this moment as clear as the first time, I was back on my living room sofa. And I looked over at the clock, and less than a minute had gone by.
Oh, my gosh.
But it still said 11. But I felt as if I had been gone for several months, because so much had transpired. Well, there was a qualitative difference. I may have been still laying on the couch with my arm exactly where I remembered it, looking over at the clock exactly as I remembered it, except, it was little time. The room was glowing this golden white light, and it was emanating from my body. And the whole room was just awash with it, and my body was still tingling. I like to refer to it as a cosmic orgasm, because I can't describe the good feeling that I felt at that moment. Beyond that, everything was just incredibly intense. I had histories. I had chemical reactions. I had sciences. I had people, places, things, all whizzing through my mind, knowledge of an immense nature that it just literally paralyzed me. I couldn't move. I was like vibrating on the couch. After a couple hours, I fell asleep. And I awoke to a telephone ringing. And it was about 8 o'clock in the morning. And I groggily got up and I went in and answered the phone. And there's a woman that I had only met previously a few days ago at someone else's birthday party. Her name was Pam. She's since deceased. But Pam said, "Hello, are you David so-and-so?" And I said, "Yes." And she says, "Spirit gave me your number and wants me to take you to Tucson."
Wow.
Keeping in mind, I was living in Casa Grande out in the middle of the desert. I said, "Well, how did you get this number?" And she'd already told me, but I asked the question anyway. She says, "Well, Spirit gave it to me." And I said, "Well, who's this Spirit?" She says, "Well, just think of them as angels," because I was feeling a little apprehensive at the fact that spirits were talking through this woman. Well, I said, "Well, why should I go with you?" And she says, "Well, you did have an interesting experience off-world last night, didn't you?"
Oh, my
well,
God.
That got my attention. And I said, "Come on and get me." And so about 20 minutes later, she pulls up in an old beat-up yellow Volkswagen Bug. And I didn't even wake my wife. She was still back there. I didn't tell her I was leaving, just left a little note, and got in her car, and we went to Tucson. Well, as we're driving to Tucson, I'm feeling very strange. I'm looking around at all the other cars and her, and there's colors coming off of the cars, like rainbows. And there's colors around her body. And as we pass these people with all these colors, I'm feeling like my bones hurt, or I'm happy, or I'm sad, or whatever it is. Well, today I know I was empathically feeling everything around me. At the time, it was just confusing and sort of miserable because I couldn't turn it off. It was just very uncomfortable not knowing why my bone hurt or my hand hurt or my heart palpitated, but it was happening, and but it didn't feel like me. It was outside of me somehow. And we traveled to Tucson. It was about a 90-minute drive. And we get off at the exit. It's called the Ina Road exit. And I used to actually live with my parents in an area in that part of Tucson, my grandparents, very close to where we ended up. And we go down Ina Road, and we end up at an old grocery store that had been converted to a bookstore called Bookman's. And it was like the biggest used bookstore in the state at that time. It was a brand new concept. And we went inside, and this is where we're walking along stacks of shelves that are about 8 feet high. And she's just walking me around the store. She says, we're just going to walk until something happens. And we walk along these one group of shelves, and I look in front of me, and this book about three shelves high literally starts edging its way off the shelf and drops at my feet. And I look down. It's a big blue book. I didn't know what it was. I picked it up, and as I said earlier, it is a religious book. I didn't really want it. She says, no, that's the book Spirit wants you to have. That's why we're here. So I picked up the book. We went out, and those of you who read the Urantia material will find the irony in this. When I paid for it, the bill came to, with tax, exactly $7, which has meaning to those of us who've read the book, because the number 7 is very important. In any
case, were you in a used store?
Yes, this is nothing but used books called Bookman's, Tucson and Ina Road. And so we took the book, got back in our old bug, drove right back to my house, 90 minutes back the other way. I'm still seeing colors, feeling weird things from people. And she drops me off at my house. I get out. I take the book, go inside. My wife is out training horses at the time. I throw the book on a desk that I work at, and it opens up to a page, and I bend over and I look at it, and it says, The Sea of Glass. And all the hair stood up. I had more hair then. I don't have much now. But but it got my attention because it described where I had just come from the night before. I read that book, the Urantia book, over 30 days, cover to cover. Something I cannot do again, but there was more. As I read each line of text, another line of text would appear that's not in the book.
Oh,
I was
my
being
God.
Given, I was being given double the information on every page, you know, like the between the lines kind of a thing, that at the time that didn't mean much to me. I just thought it was another strange occurrence that had been ongoing those days. Today, I now know what it means, and I've actually used it, because contained within the Urantia book, and you're hearing it here for the first time, you know, worldwide, there's what I like to call subtext. The Urantia book is designed with more than just what you see. It has an encoded way of getting more information, like a hologram, built into it, and anybody can access it. So anyway, that's what I was getting, but I wasn't understanding it at that time. For that entire month, I couldn't leave the house. I had a business in Casa Grande, a bookstore. I had to let a manager manage it because I couldn't handle what was going on. I had animals coming up to the door that were injured, wanting to be fixed. And interestingly enough, at the time, I could touch an animal and heal it immediately. I didn't know how this worked. Please understand, it's not like I was going, oh, please, Father, heal this animal. That wasn't happening. It would just come up, I'd pet it, and it'd be okay. I had all of these residual things that I could do, a lot of different things, that today people say, oh, that's like magic, or that's a superpower something. Well, relax, I don't have them anymore. I can still access elements of it because I understand it now. But then it was like I was supercharged. So that was my basic story on the introduction to the Urantia book. And from that point forward to where we are today, my life has been filled with, I'll say, urgings from the spirit side to learn different things about this world, this planet, and to do different things in this world, this planet. Some of them not very pleasant. Some of them very unpleasant, but it's part of my experience. So there you have my basic story, the same basic story with a few embellishments that you would read on the internet site.
So I would
say... Happy to entertain any questions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would say that you, right after that experience, I have several questions right off the bat. It occurs to me in a statement, it occurs to me that you were in a state of grace after that experience. How long did that last?
Well, the intense portion, maybe 24 hours, the abilities to do very amazing things, probably 6 months, slowly diminishing as I got back into this world. But to this day, there are still certain things that came back with me that are still just as strong.
Wow. And did your friend, Pamela, ever tell you how she knew what experience you had had the night before?
Oh, she told me right up front, right on the phone. She says that, quote, spirit told me. Well, she told me to think of them as angels. Pam was what the Urantia community might consider to be a natural transmitter receiver. People not familiar with Urantia material might consider her to be a psychic. She was just very sensitive to communications from the unseen part of the world around us, which is very diverse. I've since learned how anybody, it's our natural birthright to be able to do what Pam does. She was just paying attention, where most of us do not. And so she was getting messages from any number of possible sources, but she referred to them as being angelic. I personally think that they were probably, again, in the nature of secondary midwayers, because I've had a number of encounters with them over the past years. They seem to be very busy in some instances. For those who might be listening who don't know what I just said and it just sounds like gobbledygook, our world is composed of more than you can see, hear, feel, taste, and so forth. A lot of you may intuitively know this but don't know it for certain. But just like a dog can hear things we can't hear, or perhaps a cat can see things we can't see because their senses are heightened beyond ours, there are other things going on around you all the time that you're totally unaware of. Right now, if we were speaking over the airwaves on FM radio or perhaps on television where it was broadcasting, or even all the cell phone calls that are going through your body at any given time, you're totally unaware of them, but they're there. And if you had a way to tune into that cell phone call or that television signal or that radio signal somehow within your body just by wanting to tune into it, you could hear it without any radio receivers. Well, that's what all of us can do when it comes to certain spiritual matters, what I'm terming spiritual, when in fact it's just part of our natural order. It's not really spiritual, but it's what the Urantia book might refer to as your spiritual vision. Or perhaps if you're a Bible scholar or even just a reader, you might say it's the still small voice within, or that vision that you might have that's sent to you from God or the angels. Well, that's normal all the time. You just have to pay attention and know how to do it. And I've taught a lot of people how to do it because it's really not hard.
Well, that brings me to a quote. I have to share a quote here from the Urantia book because I think what you just said is so vitally important. We humans tend to think that because we can't see something, it doesn't exist. Well, before microscopes, does that mean germs didn't exist because we couldn't see them? No, it doesn't mean that at all. Microscopes gave us the ability to see what to our eyes is invisible. Doesn't mean those things don't exist just because we couldn't see them with the naked eye. And this quote is from the Urantia book, of course, from Part 4, Paper 167, the Jesus Papers. The paper is Visit to Philadelphia, and Section 7, Jesus is talking about angels. It's called The Talk About Angels. He says to the apostles, "And do you not remember that I said to you once before that if you had your spiritual eyes anointed, you would then see the heavens opened and behold the angels of God ascending and descending? It is by the ministry of the angels that one world may be kept in touch with other worlds. For have I not repeatedly told you
that I have other sheep, not of this fold. And these angels are not the spies of the spirit world who watch upon you and then go forth to tell the Father the thoughts of your heart and to report on the deeds of the flesh. The Father has no need for such service, inasmuch as his own spirit lives within you. But these angelic spirits do function to keep one part of the heavenly creation informed concerning the doings of the other and remote parts of the universe. And many of the angels, while functioning in the government of the Father and the universes of the sons, are assigned to the service of the human races. When I taught you that many of these seraphim are ministering spirits, I spoke not in figurative language nor in poetic strains. And all this is true, regardless of your difficulty in comprehending such matters. So, you know, I guess you have to believe that God is powerful enough to write a book to believe that Jesus even said that. However, when I read his words from the Urantia book, in my heart of hearts, I hear his voice. And he said, my sheep will know me, and they will hear my voice. The sheep know the shepherd. He enters the sheepfold through the gate, and the sheep know him, and they will come to him. They won't come to a stranger. And I know my master, and I know these are his words. And beyond that, I couldn't prove to anybody that they are. And it doesn't, you know, matter to me anyway, whether a person believes it or not. But I think that it's vitally important that we understand that there's an ultimate reality far beyond any material reality that is spirit, a supreme reality. And just because we can't see it or taste it or smell it with our crude human senses, you know, once you've read the Urantia book, you get a sense of these matters. But I don't know that you could get that sense without having read it. Maybe there's other materials on the planet that could give you more of a sense of the spiritual realm. I've never found any that were as good. So,
I wonder if I might add something to that.
Sure.
For those individuals who are already readers of the Urantia book, you will find this information, I think, equally as valuable as anyone who has never read it, and perhaps will for the first time go out and at least investigate it. And for those who might be already struggling with some of what we've been talking about because it seems to go against much of what they have been taught their entire lives from a biblical standpoint or some doctrinal standpoint of their particular belief system or church. If you have an opportunity to reread the final sections, which we have been calling the Jesus Papers of the Urantia book, I want you to consider the following and read it with some new eyes in a slightly different way than you perhaps have done before. Many of you may have already discovered this, and I commend you on that, because it's what our Creator had in mind. The Urantia book, much like a parable, will let you go to any depth of information you want. You can look at the surface of it, or you can look at the deeper meanings of each of the words and the ways in which they have been placed in front of you. And one of the things that I noticed early on, and not because I had any special experience, it just is the way my mind works, is that the Jesus Papers are not about so much the life of a man that is somewhat extraordinary, so much it is depicting to each and every one of us who are his equals as a what is known as a creator son with a small s. We are all fledgling creators. It's a how-to book. It tells you how to access all of your God-like powers, which we all have as a natural birthright, but don't know how to use. Remember, I said I had a lot of things going on I just didn't know how to use? Well, I know how to use it now, but the Jesus Papers goes into great detail telling you what the powers are and how they work. I'll give you an example or two.
Yay!
When it comes to prayer, everyone always remembers that there was this event, both biblically and in the Urantia book, which was in more detail, describing the feeding of about 5,000 people with just a few loaves and fishes. And that particular occurrence in the text talks about how, you know, the apostles had a few things that they could do, but it certainly wasn't going to feed the multitudes. And Jesus did something that allowed them to feed the multitudes and have a lot of leftovers by the time they were done. Remember that story?
Yeah.
Well, he illustrated how to manifest that kind of power, and he wasn't using God-like powers as a creator of a universe. He strictly tried to stay away from that. Instead, he was using his normal, earthly, human God-like powers we all have, and here's how he did it. And you can go back and check me and read it, and you'll see it. I don't care if you read the Bible and or the Urantia book, you'll get the same message. He didn't do something like praying to the Father, please send us a bunch of bread and fishes to feed all these people. I don't think Jesus had an accent like that, but I'm using it to illustrate the point.
Okay.
Instead, he simply thanked the Father for having done it. And then it happened. Because
wow.
This is the way it works. You already have that kind of power because you have a fragment of the Father known as the Thought Adjuster or the Father Fragment or the Mystery Monitor, whatever name you like. Mine likes to be called Ambrose for whatever reason. Cracks me up. But in any case, the power doesn't come from you. The power comes from that part of the Father that is with you. The access to that power, however, is yours with consent. You are the one who has all the will to do something. So you are the creator, the little fledgling creator. And if you want to create loaves and fishes for multitude, you can do it so long as it is not contrary to the Father's will for whatever your intention was for that loaves and fishes event. So by just simply thanking the Father for doing it, you're acknowledging your creator status and he's going along with it power-wise. And Jesus showed you in great detail that that's what he did. In fact, if you read all of the so-called miracles, he does the same thing every time. He never does it. He always gives credit to the Father and thanks the Father for having done it before it got done. Because you have to have faith is not about you think it will happen if. Faith is about it just happens and you thank because you know it just happened. That's also how healing takes place, a host of things. Well, so there's one illustration. Here's another illustration. I frequently teach individuals a technique which is formerly military, but now is pretty widespread for those who are open to the concept. There is a physical technique, a sort of a scientific technique, known as non-local awareness in physics, especially certain types of physics, but most people know it by the term remote viewing. This is where you can become aware of information that you normally would not be aware of. Some people think of it as spooky actions at a distance. They have lots of names for it. But Jesus illustrates this ability of every one of his brothers, meaning you and me and everybody. I use the term brother to mean both men and women because God views both men and women as his sons. It's just a terminology. It doesn't mean you're male or female. You're just an offspring. You're a son. In any case, Jesus had a time when he was going to be going, and this is both biblical and Urantia book once again. He was going to be going in back into Jerusalem, and he was going to want to travel, and he was looking for something to travel on in the Palm Sunday area. And he told a couple of his apostles that, you know, if you'll go out to this tree, out at that place, you'll meet this farmer who has that donkey, which he'll lend to you. There was no way that he could have known about it, you know, from the standpoint that he hadn't talked to the farmer yet, but he just told them, you're going to find this when you get there. Well, most people view that as some kind of a a mysticism where he had these powers to contact the farmer with his mind to bring this thing to this place and all that. Well, that's not how it worked. In fact, he tells you how it worked. He was illustrating the idea of how to use what I'm calling remote viewing, how to know future events before they occur, because where we are as beings in the physical, we don't see things. We just see what's in front of our noses. But when you use what the Bible calls spiritual vision or spiritual eyes in the Urantia book, what you're actually doing is using that natural ability we all have to see anywhere through time and space and any time through time and space at will. And here's how it works. Because we have the Father fragment within us, we are accessing God's knowledge, which is all knowledge. And God allows us to access that knowledge whenever we ask for it. Remember, you've had the lessons of, you know, knock and you'll receive, seek and you'll find. That's all about the remote viewing, but it wasn't put into words like we have today that are more instructional as to, you know, how do you do it? Those are the results, but how do you do it? It's illustrated in great detail throughout the Urantia book. The Bible has one passage on how to do it. It says, listen to your still small voice. That's not quite enough. The Urantia book, through example, tells you quite a lot more. So my recommendation is, if you really want to find out what your godlike powers look like in the body today, look at everything illustrated in the book that he could do, because he told you you can do that on a lot more, and you can, and that's what I use all the time. It's simple. It's not magic. It's your birthright. So there you go. I just wanted to expand it. Once again, I'm a bit wordy.
Well, that's fine.
What do you believe that the message is from the book? And what do you believe I know that would be difficult to do, but just what would be the synopsis of the message that you got in your mystical
My book? Journey?
your non-mystical journey, but your... Okay. Your off-world journey, and then how would you describe the message of the Urantia book?
Yeah, I was given a lot of information, most of which I have not disclosed. I have disclosed elements of it to certain individuals like Mary from time to time. But the overall message is what the book tries to say. These are my words. These are not Michael's words. These are not Jesus' words. These are my understanding of the flow of the message. So I want to get that right up front. These are my words.
Right.
I know for certain, at least in my experience, that Jesus never, ever, nor did Michael ever want any religions to be built up around him as an individual. He absolutely didn't want that. He wanted the message to be what was important. It's not about the life. The life was just an illustration of the message. And the message was that there's a piece of the Father within you. I stated this early on. It was in Mary's book as well. In
mm-hmm.
other words, we travel through our life not alone. We have a physical piece of the Father. And I'm going to digress here for just a moment to explain this. For those individuals who might not understand, it's one thing to think that God is somewhere outside of us, when in fact God, and people have heard God is within us, but they don't really understand what that means, because it's not in your body that God is within you. It's within your spiritual self. In other words, you are a blended being. Everybody has a concept that they have a physical body and a soul, but most people can identify with that. People can also identify with the idea that perhaps they have guardian angels around them that are part of their life. Well, what I'm talking about is you not only have that and a lot more, you also have an actual physical piece of the Creator of everything that is that goes along with you. It's your own personal piece of the Father, almost as if you were carrying a dime in your pocket, except it's non-physical. And it's a lot like today, people with cell phones can understand, you're carrying a cell phone around with you, you've got access to the internet, you've got access to immense knowledge and information and entertainment. Well, you're carrying around a piece of the Father with you, so you have access, just like a cell phone, to the entire universe of universes at any given time. You just have to know how to access it. Well, once you know that you have that kind of power with you, certain types of fear can go away because you're not alone anymore, and you have all kinds of information that you might need, and you know God's right there in your pocket with you. You just have to know how to sort of let God in to activate it. Well, part of the activation of this peace of God that's with you, which is the first thing that I got, that yes, indeed, the Father is with you, just exactly like Jesus has a peace with him, that is the Father. To see Jesus is to see the Father. Well, guess what? To see us is to see the Father too, just in a different aspect. There are three things that were very important in his message. The first one was of your own free will, because free will is the number one, and I do mean the number one rule of the Father's universe, is love the Father, love God of your own free will. If it's not of your own free will, then God's commanding it, and what kind of love is that? It's not. So he wants you to love him because you want to love him in any way that's good for you. So first part, love the Father. Second thing that's important in the message is to love your fellow man, your brothers, your sisters, who are all sons of God, every one of us, to love them as you love yourself. Some of us don't have enough love internally for ourselves and find it difficult to love anyone else, but that's part of the mission, is to learn to love others as you love yourself. You don't have to achieve it, but at least try to achieve it. That's the goal. And the third part is to love your fellow man as he, our Creator, loves us. He loves us unconditionally. That's how he wants you to love other people. So, love the Father of your own free will. Love your fellow man as you love yourself. Love your fellow man or woman as he loves us, indiscriminately, no respecter of persons. That was the basic message. Everything else, again, is just support to achieve those three things. And then I'm going to add a fourth one, and this one was really important, because the first three are support for the fourth one. God's will, if you will, I'm not speaking for God, but God's will is for you to have your own individual life and have as many and varied experiences as you can in life as possible. Don't copy someone else's life. Live your own, because that's what he enjoys. When you want to worship the Father, you do it by helping other people. You can't give him a gift he doesn't already own, but you can, of your own free will, help one of your brothers who also have pieces of God within them. So you're actually serving God every time you serve somebody else. But he wants you to do it in your way, whatever's best for you, not the way someone else tells you to do it. So there you've got my nutshell version of everything, and anything else is just support material.
Well, you know, I posted, I don't know if you know, David, but there's a chat board that goes on simultaneously while we're talking. And I posted a couple of quotes on there based on what you were saying. One is from the Urantia book, paper 118. And what a son desires and the father wills will certainly come to pass. And then, of course, Jesus said in paper 146, what a true son desires and the infinite father wills is. And so that is also another part of the message, I think, too, in what you were saying, and that is about living faith. And
go ahead.
When we realize that we are the faith sons and daughters of the infinite Heavenly Father, then we realize that we are truly rich in the truest sense of the word, and that there is really nothing that can thwart or jeopardize our purpose if our purpose is the Father's will. And that doesn't mean that, you know, we will miraculously not die on this planet. Everybody dies on this planet, you know, or that we'll never have trouble on this planet. We know that you know, humans learn more from adversity than anything else. You know, so to think that God is going to give you a life of ease, it just ain't going to happen. You know, and David, I know you've had your share of sorrow and heartache, but it doesn't thwart a true son of God. Because when you have faith in that, you know that all things truly do work together for good. And you know that nothing, you know, it's like Jesus' affirmation of faith, you know, that he gave to get it. I have absolute confidence in my Heavenly Father's overcare. I'm consecrated to doing the will of my Father in heaven. I do not believe that real harm can befall me. This is coming from the guy who later got crucified, right? So he's saying real harm, right? I do not believe that my life work can really be jeopardized by anything my enemies might wish to visit upon me. And surely we have no violence to fear from our friends. I am absolutely assured that the entire universe is friendly to me. This all-powerful truth I insist on believing with a wholehearted trust, in spite of all appearances to the contrary. That's the kind of faith that gets you through the darkest night. And if Jesus could state that faith unequivocally, so can we. We can share that faith with him and that assurance that no matter what happens on this planet, because of the mistakes and the blunders of our ancestors or our predecessors, it's going to be made right. And it's all going to be okay. Because the Father wills it so. Because the Sovereign Michael wills it so. They're in complete union in their will. And it's just about us coming along. And I agree with you, David. I think we could do miraculous things on this planet if we lined up with that will. And
I
maybe
think
they
also
wouldn't.
If we do, I think also those things are multiplied when we do them collectively, you know, when two or more are gathered in his name, in my name. There seems to be some additional power of effectiveness when we act in teams.
I don't disagree with you, but I would like to add that it only takes one, because you have access to all power, that when you work associatively with others, it brings more viewpoints to bear on a particular endeavor, but mm-hmm. in terms of the power, it is the same power, because each individual who might be working collectively is working with the same infinite power, not multiples of the infinite power. So while it may have the illusion of more people working together to accomplish something on the non-physical side, it only takes one. Everyone else is just support.
Well, one of the things it says in the Urantia book is that it is, however, that when we do work together, our ability to accomplish is more like the square root rather than the...
Oh, absolutely, on the physical.
Pardon me?
I said absolutely, on the physical. But when it comes to the spiritual, it only takes one to have the faith.
Absolutely.
You know, and interestingly, I want to share something else with you, because we're talking about maybe things like healing. And this always comes to me as a reference, because when Jesus came down the Mount of Transfiguration with the three apostles, he realized that the apostles in camp had been trying to heal the epileptic boy, and they totally failed. And the Father came up to them and said, came up to Jesus and said, you know, these men were trying to heal my son. And, of course, Jesus was dismayed. And later, and he did go ahead and heal the epileptic boy for his desperate father. In fact, when the apostles tried to heal the boy, he had a worse epileptic seizure than he was having prior to them trying to heal him. Jesus did not say to his apostles, "Why do you insist on trying to do these things? You cannot do it. You will never be able to do it, so don't bother. You're wasting your time." He didn't say that. He did not say that. He said to them, "No sooner does your faith grasp the identity of the Son of Man than your selfish desire for worldly preferment creeps back upon you, and you fall into discussing among yourselves as to who should be greatest in the kingdom of heaven, a kingdom which, as you persist in conceiving it, does not exist nor ever shall. Have not I told you that he who would be greatest in the kingdom of my Father's spiritual brotherhood must become little in his own eyes, and thus become the server of his brethren? Spiritual greatness consists in an understanding love that is godlike, and not in an enjoyment of the exercise of material power for the exaltation of self. In what you attempted, in which you so completely failed, your purpose was not pure, your motive was not divine, your ideal was not spiritual, your ambition was not altruistic, your procedure was not based on love, and your goal of attainment was not the will of the Father in heaven." So I take that sentence and I reverse it, and I say, okay, Master, what you're saying then is you might have succeeded, you would have succeeded, if your purpose was pure, your motive was divine, your ideal was spiritual, your ambition was altruistic, your procedure was based on love, and your goal of attainment was the will of the Father in heaven. So, I have to say, I think I agree that we can do amazing things if we line up. It's almost like, we're channels of that energy, and to the degree that we have these selfish and egoistic little power trips, we block that flow. But if we line it up, it's like one of those lock boxes, you click the right combination and boom, you're in it. You're in that flow and it comes through you, and you can do amazing things. That's a long way of making a point, I guess.
Well, we're down to the last 20 minutes of the program again. And I wanted to just give you the overview that, that you gave us earlier in the show about Mary's book, where she talks about sort of what the synopsis is of the gospel, or the message, if you will. And I just had it up here, and now I've lost it. But basically, it's talking about really devoting yourself to loving God and loving your fellow man, being devoted to doing the will of your Father in heaven, and being devoted to doing the golden rule, or to living the golden rule, and then sort of taking that a step farther, and not only loving one another as you would be loved, but loving one another as he loved us. Boy, I'm sorry, I've completely lost the beautiful synopsis that she had here. And, here it is, Jesus' core teaching. It was that many people did not understand the true kingdom of God teachings. They often confused it with Jesus' return to rule in power and glory. And it says that the gospel of the kingdom from the Urantia book is the kingdom of heaven is at hand. In Hebrew, this meant the kingdom is here. It has arrived. And I would add, the kingdom of God is within us. meaning that we have that fragment of God within. Then by faith in the fatherhood of God, you may enter the kingdom of heaven, thus becoming the sons of God. In other words, if you believe God is your father, you are then his child. This makes you a part of the family of God or the kingdom of heaven. Then love is the rule of living within the kingdom, supreme devotion to God while loving your neighbor as yourself. Love dominates the actions of God's devoted children. The golden rule is another way of teaching us how to treat others with love. Obedience to the will of the Father is the law of the kingdom. Following God's will produces the fruits of the Spirit in one's personal life. We are free will creatures. We freely choose to obey God's will, and in doing this, we spiritually grow. And that's her synopsis. She goes into a little bit more detail, but I think that's a pretty succinct way of putting it.
Yes, I agree.
If I were to add something, I would list what the fruits of the Spirit are. And that would be loving service, unselfish devotion, courageous loyalty, sincere fairness, enlightened honesty, undying hope, confiding trust, merciful ministry, unfailing goodness, forgiving tolerance, and enduring peace.
Beautiful. David, are you still with us?
I am. I was just listening carefully. I might add, I know you want people to ask questions. I would like that too. But there are a lot of individuals who may or may not be able to listen with open ears sometimes because there's this sort of a spiritual, religious, flowery language to a lot of what we talk about. And men especially, a lot who are in engineers or science or whatever, they're going, you know, you can't prove to me that there's a God. I really don't get into this whole spirit thing, seeing with your faith eyes, all of that. For those individuals who have that, we'll call it sort of a challenge in understanding, there are other texts available of a science nature that dovetail very nicely with the Urantia material that if anyone emails me, I'm happy to give them sort of a suggested reading. For example, there is a book about the holographic universe by a particular author, which is quite good. And it matches exactly the science within the Urantia book as to explaining how God does what God does. Now, the writer of that book falls just short of giving credit to the rules of the universe from a science standpoint to a creator, you know, but goes right up to the edge and says, this is how it actually works and you can prove it for yourself. Well, the Urantia book says the same thing with different language, but it actually names who started the hologram. And those kinds of texts, which I've researched over 25 years, I'm sure others have as well, for those who are more science mind want to know, well, how does God do it? How can we have a fragment of God in us? That explains it from a viewpoint of science very succinctly how it is, because the rules of our universe are set up in a very ordered fashion.
We do have a question from the chat room. One of our listeners wants to know if you have ever read Cosmic Consciousness by Bucky, B-U-C-K-E.
It's not ringing a bell with me, no.
He doesn't make any other reference, so I don't know what he's referring to, but he asked us to ask you that. So, okay, we asked him that.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with having read that book. I've read many texts, but that's not one that comes to memory.
Well, you've said a lot of intriguing things to me, David. You earlier made a statement that the Urantia book is written like a hologram and you can access other information.
Yes.
You know, there's a remarkable teacher of the Urantia book who has a class every Friday night at a church in Boulder. His name is Chris Halverson. He has a PhD in science. I believe he's doing exactly that. I believe that he's cracked that code, and he is getting that information because he has insights. He gets insights from the book that are just uncanny. They're remarkable, and people are just blown away by them. You can actually join us. Anybody can join his class via Skype or in person, obviously. It happens every Friday night at about 7:15. And long-time readers, 30, 40-year readers, will go to his class and come away going, wow. Where does he get this? You know, how does he come up with this?
And I can give everybody... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I can give everybody a quick 30-second way they can probably do what he does, although I don't know what his method is since I don't know him or what he does firsthand.
I think he just has a very photographic memory and has a way of, sort of pulling.
He synthesizes new holes from bits and pieces.
Right.
He does.
Right.
That's kind of how my mind works, so I understand. But anybody
can do
that.
I have a feeling he's sort of a fractal thinker.
There you go. That's a good way of putting it.
Seeing the pattern.
Yes, everyone is familiar with how the internet works when you're just out surfing.
Mm-hmm.
You might put a particular term out there to go look for flowers, and then, of course, pretty soon you end up looking at long, mean coats because somehow it ended up being to start with flowers led you to that ad, and you jumped over here and you jumped over there. The Urantia book is set up the same way in print as a kind of a program text. And so if someone were to go to the free online versions of a Urantia book and do what's called a word search, and let's say you just put in the word midwayer, it'll spit out dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of paragraphs and pages of information containing the word midwayers. If you read just those pages, all of a sudden you get an entirely different perspective on the concept of midwayers, which actually are throughout the entire 2,000 pages of the book. You might get a synopsis of maybe 10 pages, and you get an entirely different flavor, if you will, of what makes a midwayer what it is than if you had just read bits and pieces of them throughout the book. And that way you can form a better mental picture of what makes a midwayer, where before it might have just been a term that meant nothing to you. That's a kind of encoded subtext. It goes deeper than that, but that's a good way to start.
You know, I have found that, back in the late 1980s, Kristen Michaels created a study aid that for me has been absolutely invaluable, and that is the Urantia book on folio views, search engine, that you can do exactly that. And it's absolutely fascinating to do these studies from the book and just, you know, type in a word like midwayer and see. And the beautiful thing about folio views is it comes up in context everywhere it appears in the book. And you can start from the beginning to the end. And when you pull up things like, well, one of my favorite searches is what I call a definition search, which is faith is. You can do a phrase. Faith is, and then it pulls up faith is everywhere in the book, and it gives you all of these marvelous definitions. You know, these revelators have given us these definitions, and they go, and they're golden threads that go throughout the whole book. Or God is, or Jesus is, or, you know, you can search almost any term for the definitions and for the thread or the pattern. And I agree, it's absolutely a wonderful way to study the book and to study the concepts of the book.
And in many ways, much more effective.
Yeah, in many ways it is. Because it's hard to remember, in some instances, what the divine counselor in paper one said about faith compared to what Jesus said about it. You know, and even though they're saying the same thing, they are different personalities, and each one adds a perspective that's insightful and beautiful. So, you know, I have thoroughly enjoyed, and I did hundreds of studies, topical studies, what I call topical studies for truthbook.com, so that anybody could just say, well, gee, I wonder what the Urantia book says about angels, and have, you know, pretty much the gist of it in a topical study. Great way to go through the book sometime. I highly recommend it. And I've never found a search engine better than Folio, but Truthbook has a pretty good one now that was created for the site. So Folio, the trouble with Folio is it's such a good search engine that they've gotten very proprietary, and now they charge you outrageous licensing fees, and the publishers of the book have never been able to afford to put it, you know, the new formats, the new operating systems like Windows 7, it won't work with that old disk, and they can't afford to buy the new licensing for it. So it's just too bad. But
I tried downloading it onto my computer and have yet to succeed in getting it to work. I think part of the problem is just not having enough space on my laptop.
Well, that could be. Some of the newer operating systems don't work with that Folio views. And the thing is that it's grandfathered. We can use it in the format we've got it in, but we just can't afford to update it to the new platform that it's on. And so it doesn't work with Windows 7 or some of the newer operating systems. It makes me very sad. It's like my constant companion.
Well, there was a period of time in my life when I didn't have access to a computer for a few years, and I was using what is known as a concordex of the Urantia book, which is a, sort of a written version of a word search.
Yeah,
and
very limited index sort of tool.
Yes, it is, but for those who may be challenged in some fashion, may not even have access to a computer, there are other tools they can use to do the same kind of investigation.
Oh, absolutely. And you know,
another tool that was really great in a book form was the Parimony. The Parimony, which is a synthesis between the Urantia book and the Bible.
Yeah, and the Uversa Press book comes with an index, which is really a great index. I don't know if you have a copy of the newer book, David, but the index at the back is really quite nice, and it leads you to section paragraphs, so that's great,
yes,
too.
Yes, indeed it is. I wonder if I might, in our waning moments, just put in a shameless plug for Tuscan Sky Publishing, because it's there to help people. It's a tool. My focus is not so much on trying to sell people's books, although that is a portion of what's there. This is a writer's forum. This is a place to explore things you perhaps have not done before. And because it's in its inception stage, anyone who might be listening, whether they believe they can write or not, we're there to help them. And if you'll just go through the site, you will see that there are many areas, whether it be natural healing, earth-friendly subjects, philanthropy, art, science, whatever it is, you might have even a one-page article you've always wanted to put out to the world to read. It's there for you to be published by us. So I just invite everybody to go through the whole thing, and we'll teach you how to become published with your thoughts and ideas, even if they've been sitting on that closet shelf for years.
That's www.tuscanskypublishing.com, correct?
Correct.
terrific.
And can you tell
us
so quick in the waning moments about your project to feed the hungry?
Well, very soon you will see, again, through the philanthropy portion of our website, a link to an entirely new website called the Billion Dollar Project. And this is a project that we've created from the grassroots level. I can't give you detail on it at the moment because I don't want the world to know about it till we're ready for the world to know about it. But I can tell you that what we are doing is raising $1 billion. We're not doing this through a donation stratagem. We're using something entirely different. And we're going to raise $1 billion for an endowment that will in turn fund soup kitchens and other food projects like community gardens and things of that nature to feed the hungry, because all these little things you see around the various cities and country, they're always hurting for money. They're always looking for donations. Well, I want once and for all to have a place where they don't have to go out and focus on earning money to give people the food, that they can just focus on helping people. So the Billion Dollar Project is being done in a very unique and entertaining fashion that anybody can be part of from a grassroots level, and I am not going to ask anybody for any money. I want something else from you that involves networking. And that will probably be available in about 2 weeks to a month. I can't be for certain because I'm waiting for certain licensings to happen. But it will link off of our philanthropy site. You can go there now, and you'll already see one of our other projects to feed the hungry. It's called A Community in Harmony, and that will give you a clue, but we're going to do that on a much larger scale. And anybody can be part of it, so just keep watching, and you'll see the details.
There's a young man that Paula met in Australia at the last Parliament of World Religions, where that was his goal as well. I don't know if you know about him.
No, I'm afraid there are a lot of people on the planet I haven't met yet.
Do you remember his name, Paula?
His name is Hugh Evans, I believe.
Well, he's in Australia.
His project is to end global poverty. It's called the Global Poverty Project.
Oh, sorry. I thought it was hunger.
I'm just focusing on the hungry, and I'm focusing on the hungry in America, not the rest of the world. There are others who are taking care of that. I'm focusing just on our country right now because we seem to get lost. We're down to the last few minutes.
And I'd like to just finish off with a concluding point from Mary Ebbins' new book, Quivering on the Brink, which was the primary focus of the show today. And just to say, if you don't mind me quoting something from that, Paula.
No.
David?
No, not at all. I'll just say goodbye to everybody for now, and thank you for having me, as you quote.
Oh, thank you for being on, too. The indwelling...
And David, thank you for feeding the hungry in America.
thank you for taking that up.
We're looking forward to hearing more about it when you're ready to talk about it. We'd love to have you back on.
Well,
right.
I'd love to be on. This has been delightful. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I don't know now if I have time. I don't think I have time now to read this. So.
Well, you have
3 minutes and 40 seconds.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's not what it shows on my clock.
It says,
the indwelling spirit and faith. Jesus taught his apostles on the subject of faith, the new birth. Jews taught repentance. Jesus taught his apostles. John the Baptist had taught them repentance to flee from the wrath to come. Faith, the new birth, was the price of admission to the kingdom. Jesus taught that faith was the only thing called for in order to enter the Father's kingdom. Faith is the open door to God's perfect and eternal love. He sought to help them find a real and personal experience with God, and he wanted his followers to know the pleasure of the indwelling God, of God's spirit of love and saving grace. He taught the kingdom of God is within. Jesus pointed out that after praying to the Father, they should remain silent and open, and during this quiet time, the indwelling spirit could better speak to their listening soul. The Spirit of the Father speaks best to man when the human mind is in an attitude of true worship. That's a direct quote from your ranch book, paper 146, section 2, line 17. Jesus instructed, when men and women ask, what shall we do to be saved? Ye shall answer, believe this gospel of the kingdom, accept divine forgiveness. By faith, recognize the indwelling Spirit of God, whose acceptance makes you a son of God. Entrance into the Father's kingdom is free. The progress, growth in grace, is essential to continue. The Father will always respond to the faintest flicker of faith. Some are honest but fearful souls whose faith is weak. They conform to a passive attitude of assent to religions of authority. The Father honors and fosters even those feeble attempts to reach out for Him. But you have been called out of darkness into light. You are expected to believe with a whole heart, and your faith should dominate your body, mind, and spirit. It goes on to say that the world is filled with hungry souls who famish in the very presence of the bread of life. Men die searching for the very God who lives within them. Men seek for the treasures of the kingdom with yearning hearts and weary feet when they are all within the immediate grasp of living faith. Faith is to religion what sails are to a ship. It is an addition of power, not an added burden of life. There is but one struggle for those who enter the kingdom, and that is to fight the good fight of faith. The believer has but one battle, and that is against doubt or unbelief.
Beautiful.
And now we're off the air, so I only made it through about two-thirds of that, but I'm sorry for those listeners who are listening live. Those who are listening to the archive show will still hear the end of this, so.
Well,
anyway.
Thank you.
And then again, David, thank you so much for joining us. I so appreciate talking to you, and I'd just love to have a phone conversation sometime.
anytime you like. I'm easy to find.
Okay, good. Is your number list site?
No, my email is.
Okay, I'll just.
But I can send you his number. Yeah,
okay,
and please don't share that. I like to pick and choose who gets my private number, but I am more than happy to talk with people via Skype and other things, which they will get via my email.
Yeah, very good.
All right, so I'm going to say goodbye for now because I have to get off to a hospital to attend to somebody who needs help.
Okay, God bless you. Thank you for
And give
effort.
Her our love.
I will. Thank you much. Bye.
All right, thanks for being with us. Bye-bye. Bye for now.
Thank you, Chris. Next time.
All right. And
all right,
next week our program is going to be on... I think dealing with failure, right? Or are we doing a different show next week?
Any of it is fine with me. I can talk about anything, Crystalline. You know me. I thought dealing with a good idea. So we also have coming up Roy Healy, who is a longtime reader and a practicing Unity minister who's retired now, and Roy has some great insights and a great story too. So
it'll either be Roy or the topic of failure next weekend, and we'll keep you posted. So tune in again next week, and until then, God bless you all. Have a wonderful week.
Yes, ditto. Thank you, my dear.
Love you.
Love you,
Bye
too.
For now.
Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.